and how we might best achieve integration in the future. So Dr. Nyloff, if you could get us going here, I'm sure we'll have plenty of great questions, and I appreciate your showing up today.
Oh, thanks very much, Jeff, and it's a privilege to be with you and all of your colleagues. So I think what I'd like to start is just to set context, is describe what sort of my view is of sort of what an ideal system of care would be, and then talk for a few moments about what the ideal IT support for such a system would be, then point out some of what the challenges would be to getting there, and then sort of finish by talking about, from a practical point of view, what's realistically doable today. So if we start by focusing on sort of an ideal system of care, I view that as where a team-based approach to care centered on a PCMH is coordinated across the whole continuum. And when I describe coordinated care across the continuum, I think of that in a very expansive perspective from the participants involved. And to me, it's not just the coordinating care within the patient-centered medical home, but it's extending to care coordination among the diverse specialists that may be taking care of the patient in diffuse clinical settings, the different facilities that the patient may go to, whether that's acute facilities, SNFs, long-term care facilities, coordination with home care and other community-based agencies, alternate care site cares, which could be urgent clinics in a pharmacy, those types of venues, and integration with other solutions that may be system-based or locally based, such as solutions focused on managing risk or more globally doing risk or care coordination or utilization management. And, of course, finally, into the patient's home, including be it telehealth, remote monitoring of the more chronically ill patients, and so forth. And this would all be focused on a team-based population approach, driving proactive care stratified by need. I think it's important that this is all optimized from patient experience point of view. I think many of the things that we hear that patients are looking for is not having to provide the same data many times. Once they provide it in one place, it's the liquidity of that data across the continuum is seamless. They really don't want to be the intermediary in transferring their data among providers. And they want confidence that all of the members of the expansive care team have all the relevant data across care settings and functions. They really want a single point of interaction and communication online. And we've been really sort of struck by how delighted patients are when a true population health approach has been implemented and there's proactive outreach to the patients, often in a multimodality way, but that really is, as opposed to waiting for the patients to come in for visits, there's proactive outreach for gaps in care and that sort of thing. It tremendously reflects well in the practices and the, just delights the patients. And, of course, you know, they're looking for integration with ultimately with whether it's home monitoring devices, their wellness devices like Fitbits and that sort of thing, you know, all becomes part of the patient experience that in the ultimate solution would all be integrated. If we focus for a moment on sort of what would be the ideal IT solution, I think you really have to think of it in sort of terms of the solutions, the functionality in those solutions, and ultimately what data is required to support that functionality. And it breaks down into several categories. I think the first category is supporting care locally at each site of care, and that really requires the interchange of clinical data across an enterprise, you know, from all points of care, and including labs, imaging, pathology, clinical notes and that sort of thing. It also requires a decision point with respect to what data is acceptable for clinical care with versus what data should just be used for administrative purposes, such as registries and so forth. Support for office operations, that's things as mundane as billing and scheduling, but they do impact the patient experience. Their data exchange is important, but data from these types of systems, scheduling data, billing data, can be very rich data sources for other systems that do become important in the patient experience, such as registries and care management platforms. Of course, you need a platform for your care coordination, typically an enterprise registry solution. In the ideal world, all the providers caring for a patient would be on the same platform, so they could be sharing both data and a common set of guidelines across the clinical enterprise. And that, of course, needs both clinical and administrative data from across the continuum to ideally support the functions of that type of system. And finally, of course, a high-cost case management system. Every network needs to make the decision whether that would be centralized or localized to each patient-centered medical home. My preference is that be a distributed function that's incorporated into part of the care team approach as opposed to a centralized function. I think in the ideal world, that should be integrated with the registry solution, so as patients transition through different acuity levels, they seamlessly transition on the same platform. And, of course, it needs to be integrated with the predictive modeling to identify those patients projected to have the highest costs. That type of modeling is becoming ever increasingly more sophisticated with the geographic mapping, use of socioeconomic determinants, and other similar factors in addition to the traditional factors like medical history and behavioral patterns. And, of course, integration with the remote monitoring and telehealth and so forth. And finally, integrated into that platform, I would include transitions in care and ER encounters. And for that, you really need real to near real-time data so you can be proactive about managing those types of transitions. And their ADT data becomes critical to success. I think it's also important to remember that the only way to really understand the full scope of care that the patients are getting, that's going to be care that happens both in the network and out of the network. And the only really way to get out-of-network care is to get paid claims either from a TPA or from a payer. So to the extent that that data is available, it becomes important to supplement the clinical data and administrative data that you generate from within your medical home or the health system that you're affiliated with in order to complete the picture for the patient. Obviously, all of this has significant connectivity implications, which I'll come to more in a moment. I think the other important factor is workflow integration. We're talking about a lot of systems here which are not necessarily native to the electronic medical record. Most systems have a heterogeneous environment with multiple electronic medical records. So I think one needs to think about, what level of integration one needs into the electronic medical record for these alternate care coordination and care management workflows. And I think some of that is, at the end of the day, dependent on who the end user is. And it may be important for some of this functionality to be embedded into the EMR to make the physician workflow easier, but not necessary to embed other parts of it depending on the role of alternate users, and indeed for a care manager may actually be a more convenient workflow to have it embedded in that fashion. And finally, with respect to patient engagement, I think we have to respect patient preferences. Some of it's age dependent, some not, but whether they want to be communicated with online. And I think that ultimately, the patients are looking for a single experience, and one has to be able to accommodate not just your reach from care coordination point of view, but also the operational phenomena that you need to take care of, scheduling, that sort of thing. And there's a efficiency factor to be accomplished by bringing that all together. I think that if we move on to what are the big challenges today, I think the biggest challenges are data acquisition and interoperability. You know, in the ideal world, you collect data once, but, you know, recognize that it will, by necessity, end up getting captured redundantly, and you need to be able to rationalize all that. But given that we have such heterogeneous environments and so many different EMR systems in most continuums, that we will need alternate solutions that depend on other data sources and other forms of analysis to really accomplish this. I think meaningful use in terms of driving interoperability has been disappointing. The Congress is focused on that right now, but I'm not sure that that's going to be the solution. There are some alternate interoperability solutions out there, one of which is called Commonwell, which is a collaborative among multiple HIT vendors around a common set of standards for interoperability. I think this holds promise for the future. But right now, because of EMR vendors essentially being competitive both with each other and with the vendors of other population health tools, that hasn't created the optimal environment to drive interoperability. So is a big challenge. We have sophisticated tools that are themselves interoperable and go beyond data exchange, specifically with registries and care management platforms. But moving the data around and acquiring the data for these solutions is not easy. Workflow integration is a challenge, and I think we have a big challenge with what's commonly been referred to as portal creep. Patients don't want to go to multiple portals, have to learn multiple passwords. So the unifying around a single portal solution has posed a number of other challenges. So that said, what solutions are available and what is practical to accomplish today? And I think the first comment I would make is that I think there's much too much that one can do to be able to do everything successfully at once. So I think it's really critical to prioritize and implement incrementally. Also important to be realistic with respect to what is practical and what can be supported in the current environment and given the current state of the art. And that may be somewhat dependent on the local solution, but there's barriers essentially everywhere. I think when people aim for perfection or shoot too high, that's when we see the greatest number of failures. I think one of the implications of that is that where you start today is not where any practice or organization is going to end up. So when thinking about vendor selections and solution selections, it's important to not buy or build for what you need today, but do that in a fashion that really recognizes what the ultimate end state will be. So you're putting in place the building blocks for that. I think we're going to experience an evolution both as technology evolves and as the interoperability environment evolves. I think that this is all sort of predicated on that EMRs are going to be the fundamental workflow in the clinical setting. But I think everyone recognizes today that, except in very unique situations, there also is going to need to be a population health solution that sits on top of the EMRs to support the true goals of a coordinated care approach in the patient-centered medical home model. And all of this, of course, also has to focus on, how are you going to generate your single source of truth? Nothing that kills clinical credibility than conflicting data. So taking that, an EMR will be in place as the fundamental but not total solution. I think a health information exchange in some environments is the sort of foundational element for moving clinical data around from a pure clinical care point of view, but there'll still be missing connections and lots of challenges given both the lack of interoperability, the lack of standards, and the limitations inherent with what data is actually contained in a CDA, which will be the major data that's moved around. So I think the first priority, if you sort of focus now on the care coordination piece, becomes a registry solution and a care management solution. I think it's completely doable today to have a care management and registry solution that are integrated with each other and support the mobility of patients between different levels of care, and that one that can operate in real to near real time, fully doable today. Having integrated case identification with good predictive modeling and transition alerts based on ADT feeds, again, fully doable today. Point of care decision support, care management workflow, outreach integration, multimodality, fully doable today, again, based on patient preferences. I think the real question is, what's the approach to data sources? And here I think it's important to be both clever and somewhat opportunistic about data sources. I think one of the best data sources are pre-adjudicated claims from practice management systems. Those can be reasonably easily obtained from all systems, are available in real to near real time, and give you a lot of very rich information for populating registries and care management systems. Laboratory data from reference laboratories and from hospitals, again, relatively easy to get, would be an early priority. And then that's supplemented selectively from electronic medical records, you know, both ambulatory and facility-based, you know, either via extracts or CDAs, recognizing that you can't let the lack of easily obtaining the CDAs be a barrier to getting started and getting going. Direct integration with EMR databases today is very challenging, and I would not make that a high priority. Scheduling data, relatively easily available from most systems via HL7. And then from there, it kind of becomes really opportunistic. We have clients who get data from state immunization registries, HIEs, of course, clinician-entered data, ADT feeds, as I suggested, important for managing transitions in care, and then supplementing that ultimately with your paid claims and PBM data to round out the clinical picture. I think it's important to prioritize the data sources if one tries to build a program based on every data source right out of the gate. You'll be planning for a long time and ultimately, unfortunately, doing very little. But with respect to workflow integration, doable today, integrating outputs from registry systems and care management programs, possible to integrate that with patient context and single sign-on into electronic medical records. That's very doable, but the database integration, much more challenging. That said, with single sign-on and context-sensitive integration, you can accomplish the needed workflow for clinicians, but important, again, to recognize that this isn't just about IT, but one needs to modify the workflows in the practice to be consistent with the programs you're putting into place as supported by the HIT. And then ultimately, of course, there's your risk management solution as you enter into value-based contracts, which is more focused on cost and utilization management. If you're going to be in value-based arrangements, ultimately you or your network will have such a solution. And again, integration of that data into your care management and clinical integration solutions is very doable today. You know, ultimately, if selection of a set of solutions where that's pre-integrated is a lot more efficient. Remote monitoring is available today. That's very doable. It can be integrated with care management solutions, but that's just starting to happen. One of the barriers here is that there's we're very early in that domain, and there's no dominant solutions, so no standard integrations. Doing a patient portal that combines multiple solutions with embedded links with single sign-on is very doable today, and that should generate a good patient experience. But, you know, I think I've covered a lot of ground. I'll come back to a point I made earlier is, you know, perfection is the enemy of success. And I think that, you know, choosing among these solutions and features, those that are most important to you and your patients, and implement and doing this in a phased way that's built on a foundation with the partners that focus on the end state will ultimately be the best strategy to getting to a good end state that will be successful from a programmatic point of view and from the point of view of patients and their families. So maybe I'll stop there, Jeff, and happy to entertain questions or discussion and comments.
Sure. I think there's about 2 hours worth of conversation right here that you've covered the universe. I would like to frame this up for just for a moment. In 1997, we were able to accomplish this in Massachusetts with a captured population using an integrated organization of post-acute providers, including home health, and then acute care hospitals with ER feeds. And, you know, we thought at that time that, you know, a shared care plan would be something that, you know, to us would be relatively simple to do, and we wouldn't lose so many patients through revolving doors of emergency rooms if we could somehow pull that off. But every time we strayed outside of our own organizational boundaries, we had problems. And that was the time that I left my clinical work and got involved in HIT. Now, coming back in and looking at this today, this many years later, and I'm a retired guy, and what I'm seeing, and I want to ask you if you agree or not, what I'm seeing to be the largest obstacle right now to getting a single sign-on series of functions available to the patient, the provider, and the payer, and the employer, is a lack of interorganizational operating agreement or governance, if you will. Not everybody is, for instance, at risk for the same population. So, you know, how could, you know, our organization represents physicians and employers and patients and special interest groups and policymakers. What would you say to, you know, for us is the best way that we could frame a message that would describe the need to move toward that interoperability that you described was currently being done with Commonwealth type of agreements?
Yeah, so it's a great question, Jeff. So I think that, you know, one of the greatest barriers is having a standard mechanism and a standard set of protocols that will allow the smooth flow of data and, you know, manage the patient identification, manage the patient consent, and essentially be the record locator service. So as you described earlier, you didn't have to go around collecting everything from everywhere and then assembling it.
Right.
And there's no technical challenges to doing that.
No, so, there isn't.
You know, I mean, we there are several active pilots, you know, in production today with using the Commonwealth infrastructure to do that, and it works. I think really it's a question of can we get broad enough adoption of a standard that works that, you know, we can capture a sufficient amount of data on a given patient in one platform, you know, that it actually meets a critical threshold. And I think that in some ways is, the question is that going to evolve organically, or can there be policy incentives to drive, you know, adoption of a uniform policy? You know, that to me is the question.
Such as a hub architecture? Is that, I mean, we need about PCPCC is we have the payers here and the employer. Everybody involved in health is sitting right here today at this table. And, you know, what I can say as a consumer is that I still haven't been able to in my life tie together my systems. So I have spent with my chronic illnesses, I've spent about 0.2 FTEs taking care of myself during my life. And now most employers want people to continue to work and to thrive, and they'd like to see their administrative burdens reduced. And so I start to think about, you know, is it possible to create, you know, under the initial idea of the National Health Information Exchange, for instance, is it possible to have uniform hubs for demographic information and the registry type of stuff that you've talked about? Are people currently expanding registries beyond, you know, the use of a single agency using a registry for managing cancer patients to a cross-morbid or crosswalk for all patients in large volumes and creating
sure.
a hub that is then managing patients off of that hub?
Yeah, very much so, Jeff. So we have, you know, several very large health systems where they have implemented, you know, I refer to as an enterprise registry program where
uh-huh.
essentially I think we have some that where it is in excess of a million patients across, you know, 2,000 providers where
cool.
over broad swaths of geography, all of those patients are being managed on a common registry platform that includes registries for both the preventive care, multiple chronic conditions. And each, you know, provider who participates in that registry program, you know, it's architected in such a way that they only, you know, see data on the patients that they have an established relationship with. So that,
is
that's
a multi-payer environment.
Multi-payer environment. It's designed as an all-payer, all-patient system. So it allows sort of the physicians, you know, practicing in a patient-centered medical home, you know, to care for all of their patients regardless of payer or, frankly, lack of payer for that matter, on one uniform platform. And actually, there's even a solution that along with and with that type of registry program, which essentially gets everybody collaborating across the continuum to a common set of both preventive care and chronic care guidelines on a single platform with complete data liquidity across that continuum of care, also now will be available in September, a fully integrated care management platform along with that solution that will similarly provide for a common care plan for the high-risk patients and for managing transitions of care, you know, in a similar HIPAA-compliant way across a broad, diverse, you know, geographic continuum.
Very,
so,
very
that's,
neat.
That's all very doable, eminently doable today off the shelf, frankly.
So if we have, let's say we have physicians sitting at the table today that represent their members across a dispersed geographic area in a state, but they're all members of the same society, say the State Society for Family Practice. Would it be feasible then for them, could you address what they might be looking at for in terms of functionality if they wanted to begin moving down the path of creating a primary care medical home registry system that would be used across family practice in the state of North Carolina?
Sure. So I think first, you know, they would need a governance model. So I think first that there would be an organizational infrastructure to manage this and set the rules and be responsible for HIPAA compliance and all of those sorts of phenomena. And they would have to agree on a common set of guidelines that everybody was going to manage to. Once that was done, then it becomes pretty straightforward, and they could have a registry program that covered both the preventive care guidelines and the chronic diseases, with respect to those guidelines that they were interested in managing, and that could be implemented. You know, you'd have to think about what data sources you were going to do it with originally. You know, in the optimal setting, it'd be wonderful to have that also include, you know, the most commonly used specialties, but not wouldn't be a requirement. Like the scope of the program could grow over time.
Is it easier for them if they're living in a state that has an active HIE that's currently functional, up and operating?
Probably yes, assuming that the HIE is moving around discrete data that's structured, because mm-hmm. then that HIE might become a very nice centralized source of data to feed the system.
Okay, but they don't need an HIE then?
No, they're definitely not required.
Okay. What types of changes to the, small primary care provider practice would they expect to see when they start embracing some of these population health activities?
Sure.
In terms of workflow.
So I think that really workflow and process changes is fundamental. So I think that when you implement these type of solutions, all of a sudden you have a tremendous amount of information at your fingertips, and the organizations and the practices that get the most value out of it are those that change their workflows to adapt to it, which means that, you know, setting aside mm-hmm. some time, not the physician's time, but members of the care team to actually, you know, manage the task lists of the patients who are, you know, have gaps in care, to proactively, do outreach campaigns. Now, most of this is highly automated, so it's not very time-consuming, but it does mean assigning, someone to take care of those types of activities. The flip side of it is that what ends up happening is a lot of the preventive care and the management of the chronic conditions in terms of testing and so forth gets done outside of the clinical workflow. So it actually mm-hmm. makes the actual visits at the point of care that much easier and smoother, because you're not reviewing the charts and ordering a bunch of stuff, because the patients come with most of it done proactively. So I think there's trade-offs, there's efficiency trade-offs that make up for the other work to leverage the value in the solutions.
Yeah, yeah.
Hey, Jeff, I'm going to interrupt you real quickly and just do a check to see if we've got any questions from other people who've called in. If you did put your phone on mute, you can dial *6 to unmute your line. But if anyone's got a question for Dr. Nyloff, let me just pause for a second to see if we've got any out there in the audience.
Hello?
Go right ahead.
Yes, this is Reza Jafari from Washington, D.C. area. Okay, having worked for a very small IT company called Hewlett Packard, I was wondering whether our great moderator as well as our speakers have any any information that they can share with us if there is any attempt or any project in the works for the creation of a global registry, or at least a nationwide registry to be able to move towards the direction that we heard from our wonderful speaker. Thank you.
Thank you for that question. You know, I think that, you know, it's a very interesting question. You know, I think that the question becomes is, you know, are we going to have, if you were going to go national, is the idea to actually aggregate all the clinical data nationally, or is the right approach to say we are going to have a set of standards that are adopted nationally, and if you will, a record locator service that operates on a national scale with a common set of standards and essentially accomplish the end result of a national registry through the adoption of a common set of standards and functionalities. And I think it's practical to get to the equivalent of a national registry by a common set of standards and services. I'm not aware of any initiative today to de facto build a physical, if you will, a national registry. And I think from there's a lot of challenges, both from a regulatory point of view, a HIPAA point of view, data standards point of view, to trying to do that.
Thank you.
Sure.
Hi, this is Lauren Agratis from Family Voices, New Jersey. I first have a comment that I'm hoping with utilization of e-health that there will be language access consideration because that will help reach underserved populations, and we all know that e-health helps reduce medical errors. I have a question, actually a two-pronged question, on the use of electronic medical records, particularly as they relate to medication administration. The first question being, what can be done when, for example, a physician changes a dosage of a medication, but not the actual prescription? And also, if there are medications outside the normal regimen, for example, for a transplant patient or someone on a steroid wean or someone on prophylactic antibiotics, because currently Epic and some of the other systems don't have those outside-the-box capabilities. And the second piece of the question is, how can e-health help with coordination of benefits when you're talking about public and private billing issues?
So two very challenging issues, which make them very challenging questions. You know, I think with respect to medications, you know, clearly where, you know, there is the ability in alternate systems to capture medications, capture changing dosages and so forth. Very challenging to do that in a highly automated way. You know, I think that the issues you bring up are very important, but I think that they're very sophisticated questions where I think that most of the effort today is focused on much more fundamental challenges of, you know, what are patients filling their prescriptions at all, and are they taking their medications? So really around adherence and compliance. And, you know, I think our solutions are just starting to address those things along with medication reconciliation. And I think until we get a much better handle on those fundamental needs, I think it's going to be much more challenging to solve, you know, the specific challenges that you've addressed, although clearly very important.
Yeah.
You know, with respect to can you give me your second question again? I'm sorry.
I was wondering what can be done in terms of third-party billing with coordination of benefits between public and private insurance in terms of, you know, just getting consistency.
You're right. I may not be the best person to answer that, because that's not my I'm much more focused on the clinical and cost and utilization piece of this. So I think I'll thank you for the question and respectfully say that you're not going to get the best answer from me on that one.
Yeah,
else on the call who has some particular expertise in that issue, on that particular issue, feel free to chime in.
Well, this is Jeff Harris, and
ahead,
I was going to mention the coordination of benefits piece. As it relates to, you know, coordination across multiple providers, not just traversing public to private spaces, but just using multiple providers, I'm not sure that that's been addressed yet in any of the demonstrations that I'm aware of. I'm aware of many multi-payer demonstrations, but nobody's talked about a coordination of benefit that I can think of right now function in care coordination, care management, and health information technology that I'm aware of. And I picked that up right away because that is a real painful point. And that's why I ask about, you know, how we escalate messages up to those that are writing policy for health reform around the importance of getting not just, you know, the data correct from a clinical perspective and the mechanisms for transfer correct, but also the integration of the right information to the users correct so the right decisions can be made. I downloaded Blue Button for my father last week and sorted that information and took off his 10 top diagnoses and sat down with him and helped him select out a Medicare supplement plan. Went through all the steps of doing that. He was amazed at the fact that I knew that he had skin cancer. And the information sitting inside of Blue Button was of great import to me. I then used that information to try to select another commercial product that he could buy that would yield a lower out-of-pocket cost for him based on the medicines and the diseases that he had. That work took us together, father and son, using online databases the better part of 3 days. And that's, I think, where a lot of the – so I'm just joining in with you saying I think there's a lot of savings there, that where there's potential for savings in the whole healthcare system if we can take a look at that.
Well, thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions?
Anybody else knowledgeable of work in the administrative arena around crosswalking functions with coordination of benefits, the payment end? Okay.
I think even from a clinician perspective, we've heard here at the PCPCC frustration on their end as well. As they're working across multiple payers and there's different requirements depending on the type of contracting that they're involved in, whether it's an ACO, whether it's, you know, some shared savings that are involved in, and different quality metrics, you know, different payers are requesting different sets of data and reporting, and there's not any real uniformity on that front either. So I think that that's another big challenge that we're facing in terms of getting some consensus across all the various payers and clinician, you know, health systems as well. And maybe, you know, it's at the community level, or more local level, that some of those collaborations can be fruitful. We've certainly seen it in some communities that are really leading in terms of these efforts and bringing a lot of different groups together, similar to PCPCC, but more at the local level and having some real success there.
Yeah, I mean, there has been efforts both at the, you know, there's a, you know, uniform quality metrics, you know, in California on a statewide basis. So, you know, that's been a big success story. Other regional efforts that have been successful. Of course, there is a move underway at the federal level in CMS now to try and drive alignment among the quality metrics for their different programs. So hopefully that will be fruitful, and I think that will be a very, very helpful. You know, that all said, you know, there's also technology that can, you know, our philosophy has been to say, you know, devise your clinical systems so they do the right thing for the patient, and at the same time meet the most, if you will, stringent requirements of all of the different clinical programs and guidelines that you're managing to, and then the technology under the covers and do the reporting based on the specific criteria required for each, you know, program that you're participating in. So there is a role for technology in allowing you to, at the same time, do a uniform standard of care across your population, but then comply with all of the reporting requirements on a plan or program-specific basis, leveraging the automation and technology.
Right. You just set the rules up for different reports and come up with the data off of this essentially a well-defined data system. So are the data, I have a question, are the data standards as they sit now for electronic health records for the clinical data elements that are captured, you know, the persistent ones, are they steady state enough that we could rely on the bulk of the electronic health records that are out there, you know, to have the capacity to feed us the information required to meet multiple reporting guidelines?
So, you know, our general philosophy has been that from a pure practical point of view, for capturing diagnoses and procedures, it's actually easier to use pre-adjudicated claims than it is to use an electronic medical record.
That's amazing.
It is. That,
wow.
You know, it's amazing, but that's the reality of the world today, unfortunately. Now, that said, you know, if the electronic medical record can produce a CCD or CDA as a standard output, then that's great, and that can be a substrate for those data elements that are captured in the CDA document. But the standard is not sufficiently precise that you can use those CDA documents out of the box. And what I mean by that is that there is some work that needs to be done by the recipient system for each instance of each EMR that generates those CDAs to be able
to. So implementation is still a complex process.
That is correct.
Wow.
So doable. And, you know, we probably, you know, do the translations of, you know, hundreds to thousands of these, you know, I don't have a number off the top of my head, so I don't want to give it off them, but we do translations of a huge number of these on a monthly basis, but it's still, you know, cranking them out, so to speak.
Yep.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes.
Oh, hi. This is Cheryl Riley with SciSystems. I just, you know, want to echo what you're saying here. We have so many problems trying to utilize what data is being collected in these electronic medical records to try to help our clients identify the right patients. So, you know, the thing that frightens me the most is that, you know, when you read articles all over the place, they're talking about this big data and how, you know, the electronic medical record is the thing of the future and we got to have it and we got to have all this interoperability and all this sort of stuff, but it's not happening. And the patient is the person that suffers in the long run because the clinicians like myself are, you know, helping to build things to, you know, help collect the right things, but it's all not going into the same repository and we're not connecting the dots. And so it just, the person who comes out really on the short end is always the patient. So if, you know, people can actually start to do this a little bit better, we would all be better off because
I find it amazing.
please.
Yeah, I mean, I find it so frustrating because I read all these articles about all this wonderful stuff that's happening, but when you peel the onion back and you sit down with the plan or the provider or the group or whatever, and you say, okay, well, let's take a look at your data so we can help you identify the right patients, and then we can collect more information and help really sparse out that, you know, get to the right people, and then, you know, blah, blah. It's like, oh, well, we can't do that. And I'm like, okay, well, let's start from square one again. So it is very frustrating for, and I'm sure a lot of people on the phone are feeling the same way, when you're doing care management, care coordination, you're trying to help, you know, with a patient-centered medical home or an ACO, and everybody's talking about interoperability. And we're a care management company, but we're also an IT company. So for pharma and those organizations, we're doing a lot of integration, but not for plans and provider groups and what have you. They're just not there yet. So it's very frustrating.
And, you know, what's interesting is sort of just to build on that point is that, you know, and this is not a question of bashing electronic medical records, because they clearly have a very important role in, you know, managing care within a setting and in documentation and, you know, CPOE and all these phenomena. But at the end of the day, we can construct a much more complete picture of a patient over time and across the continuum in the database for our registry solutions or care management solutions than can be done in the electronic medical record. It's not as
without a doubt. And that is, I think, you know, when I sit with my own physician, when I, you know, go for my checkups or whatever, and he's like, oh, he's struggling through his medical record. I mean, a lot of these are templates, and granted, templates have value, but that's all they're doing is they're constructing templates, and they're trying to fit everything into that template, and that doesn't work. Where care management and care coordination is more free-flowing, and we collect more information, we have scads of information on these patients, 10 times more than the providers could ever get, because they don't have the time, and you know, the EMRs are good, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining about it, but they just haven't reached the level where they say they are. You know, they talk a good story, as we all try to do, but they're not there, and there's none of that. And I've called many of the EMR companies and said, why don't we add care coordination software to your EMR? Let's work together, and we can collect and create a better product. And I'm put off. I'm told, we're not ready for that yet. You know, we're still trying to work through our own issues, and we don't want to add any more problems to what we're already trying to do. And I'm like, you're not adding a problem. You're adding more of a solution, because together is where it's going to happen. It's combining all of the pieces that are going to create the right plan for the patient. It's not just one piece, because we're getting back to silos then. We're going to go right back to where we were with the silos, and we're not making any steps forward. And that's what's very frustrating.
This is very important for us to capture for the paper that we're going to be writing. This is very important. It's what I'm having, you know, what I'm hearing today is what I heard 14 years ago. And it's one of the reasons that many of us back in those in that era took off and started building registries that were crosswalks between multiple diseases and conditions, because
right.
It seemed that the sentinel data around the patient, the belly button, so to speak, the patient object, you know, which amounted to maybe 50 elements along with a narrative about how they were living their life throughout their continuum of care, from birth to death, you know, and a secure communication portal was what was really required.
So, Dr. Nyloff, what's your take on this? What's the barriers, or what are the challenges that practitioners are seeing? Because is it that they've invested so much already in time and resources with their EHRs that they're just going to try to do whatever they can to make that fix and make that solution work, even if it's in a clunky way, but what they really need is a brand new solution? Or what are most clinicians doing? Are they starting to make that leap and say, we just really need something, a better overall platform by which we can collect and migrate all of this this data?
Great question.
It's a good question. So I think that the reality is that after all of the effort that they've put into implementing their EMRs, that they're not going to abandon. Most will not abandon their current EMR. The effort to switch and the pain of switching is just too high. By the same token, I think that there's progressive and broader realization that they're not going to accomplish what they need to in a value-based world and in a world that required true population management on their EMR platforms. So they are adopting sort of an overlay strategy where they're buying a separate solution for care coordination and care management, and the EMR is becoming one of the data sources among many for that overlay registry care management solution.
Wow.
And then they're doing just enough back integration of those other solutions into the EMR workflow, you know, to make their lives functional from a point of care point of view. And I think that's going to be the major direction that we're going to see over the next several years.
Leave it to Americans to complicate it, huh?
Right. Well, this has been a fantastic conversation. And, Jeff, you know, you hit it right from the beginning that we could go on and on and on because this is such a timely and complex issue. I think from the PCPCC's perspective, we're certainly going to take a lot of the comments and the information that was part of this call. We're hoping to integrate this into a publication, really mm-hmm. focusing in on some of these particular issues facing clinicians as they're trying to make, and it really is such an important factor in becoming a medical home, is how do you really use the technology that's available, but then also build into that technology across all these various, you know, platforms and integrate it in a way that's going to really help you better partner with those patients, and then how do patients really use this information in a way to improve their overall health. So I want to thank you, Jeff, for helping facilitate the call today, and certainly Dr. Nyloff for all of your expertise and time, and we will certainly be talking much more about this in the future. We do have these calls every month. We'll have another call in September, so watch your email for more information about those calls, and if you have colleagues that are interested in joining us, you can sign up on our website or you can send me an email at agibson@pcpcc.org and we'll get you signed up for further communications about these topics and others as well. So thanks again and everybody have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Thank you.